Welcome to the all-new Matt and Jerry 2017 podcast.
And hey, if you're listening to this on an Apple podcast, give a five-star review with an abusive comment, and if we read it out on air, you'll win a massive prize.
Simply rate us five stars, then cyberbully us.
The Agenda.
Later, All Blacks listening device was actually an All Blacks employee placed by. That sentence doesn't make sense. Soon, male contraception. Well, that comes up a lot, the male contraception, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
But now we evolve from a bag with no anus.
Is that really the headline?
Yeah.
We evolve from a bag with no anus.
Yeah. We did, Jerry.
Scientists have found that humans evolved from a bag-like sea creature that had no anus.
Jerry, it had a large mouth as well, though.
The microscopic Sacrothritus is the earliest known prehistoric ancestor of humans, living 540 million years ago.
Woo!
The creature was about 1 millimeter in size, and scientists could find no evidence of it having a backdoor waste operation.
So if you tell me something's got a large mouth and no anus, and it's a bag, it's a bag that's going to fill up quickly.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's no recycling situation, there's no wheelie bins. It's just going to fill up.
So obviously that bag-like creature with no anus that we used to be.
Yeah.
Obviously then one day one creature developed an anus.
Yeah, and everyone went,
whoa, that this is awesome. Sexy.
Because before then everything was probably going in and coming out the same hole.
Exactly.
Which you wouldn't like that, imagine if that was happening now.
Imagine that bag-like sea creature trying to pash.
We wouldn't accept that now, would we?
No, it was pashing through its anus.
Yeah, that wouldn't accept
and
that.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, there's a backdoor operation now too. And the other sea creatures would have been like, this is a sexy sea creature. And next thing you know, that one's multiplying and that one's kept on going. And now we are what we are. Now we're humans.
And so we've got everything we are now and the advanced creatures we are. We've all got the anus to thank for that.
That's right. I knew there was something fascinating about anuses.
Yeah. Well, people do seem to be quite fascinated with them.
Mm.
Some people seem to be particularly fascinated with them. It's huge.
This is huge news, isn't it? 540 million years ago. Because remember before that, we discussed that particular sea creature was the first one to have a downstairs operation?
Yeah.
You remember that the microscopic organism that we used to be that because nothing had downstairs operations.
Speaking of downstairs operations...
Morning,
Patrick with the massive downstairs.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Cox.
You must be shocked to learn that once upon a time humans were a sea creature with a huge mouth, a bag, and no anus.
Well, as you were saying, I've got my massive downstairs operation to thank for evolution.
Why? Why, Patrick?
If it wasn't for the they're calling it with the anus and then the attraction and the reproducing happening.
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't have my massive downstairs operation.
Oh, that's right. You're going to trace that back and you're going to thank a bag-like being with no anus from 540 million years ago. Well, that's good. It's good.
I'm actually bringing up for a clear out as well and to congratulate Jeremy on the agenda. Been a lot better this week.
Oh, really? Thanks a lot for that, Patrick.
Yeah, it was very low level last week, but it's really stepped up your game.
Oh, thanks a lot, Patrick. I'll take that compliment and I will take that into my daily life and that will make me feel really good about myself. Thanks a lot.
Now, Patrick with the masses downstairs, what you might want to thank is a being that came about 100 million years after that, and which was the first being in the water to copulate, and what it had was a clutching-like
hook thing.
That would sort of hook in.
It had a hook downstairs.
Yeah, just a hook.
Do you mean a dolphin?
No, this is before dolphins. We all evolved from this being that had a hook for a downstairs operation because before that, it was a spray and walk away situation.
Oh, geez, I do like a spray and walk away.
Yeah, well, we all do, but this really enabled, this hook-like creature with the hook-like downstairs really enabled you to decide where you were actually going to put your downstairs operation.
That's right. It was an ancient armoured fish. Two armoured fish dwelling in a Scottish lake were the first creatures to have sex around 385 million years ago. The ancient couple copulated side by side, ensuring that they could manoeuvre his clutching genitals into the right position.
Yeah, so that was obviously after this new... bag-like creature with
Jerry,
a mouth
and no anus. Jerry, that was 200 million years later.
Yeah. 200 million years, jeez. Yeah, yeah. I'm very happy we can talk about downstairs operations and said things as well this year. We found an alarm going off.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, they've loosened things up, thank God.
Yeah, with ACC head and our Hauraki head, Grot Lane, in charge, it's all on.
How's his downstairs operation after that vasectomy?
It's come good. It's come good. He was experiencing some discomfort on the weekend, but I think it's come good now. He said that it was his best day yesterday that he's had for some time.
Mm.
That means he's obviously had set a new record for number three then.
Yeah, he said he's been plugging away there and things are going well.
He's
so
he's got 25 to get through before he's 100% safe.
Good news for ACC and our Hauraki head, Grot Lane. Everything's working down there.
Hey, so Patrick, let's clear you out, eh?
All right, give me a Richardson cramp, my sting, and the Roger 2000. Clear the lines.
All right, okay, let's do it.
Okay, there you are, Patrick, with the massive downstairs operation.
Just a slight delay here where we sort out that complicated order.
Goodness me.
Patrick with the massive downstairs.
Hey, Jerry, should we go?
Clear the lines!
Hey, Jerry, should we go through the top five most humiliating bags in the world in honour of this creature with a massive mouth, a bag-like structure, and no anus?
You don't want to go through the top five most humiliating things without an anus.
We could do that.
Matt Heath, Jeremy Wells, The Hauraki Breakfast.
In light of a creature being discovered from 540 million years ago, our oldest ancestor, which was a bag-like creature about 1 millimetre long with a massive mouth but no anus, we thought we'd look into the most humiliating bags that have ever existed in New Zealand. I mean, I think it's important to just sort of go deep into this and get to the bottom of it, Jerry.
That's right. Look, for me, the Gino Borelli square back school bag of my childhood. Do you know the ones? They were particularly square, and they had the three stripes, the Italian stripes, right on the bottom corner with the Gino Borelli written. It turns out that was actually Dr. Steve Simpson from the Auckland University Physics Department's uncle who was running Gino Borelli, and it was not Italian at all, which is one of the great frauds of New Zealand society.
So the Gino Borelli was just some guy from Christchurch that thought if he called the bag the Gino Borelli, then everyone would think it was flash ass.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
You've got to say that's brilliant.
Well, it's clever, but at the same time, a big fraud.
Dishonest, isn't it?
A little bit dishonest, yeah.
Just a sniff dishonest. But for me, a very humiliating bag is the cross-breast one-stripe backpack from the late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
When people started just wearing a backpack that didn't have two straps, it had one that just went across.
Yeah.
And
it had the cell phone pocket and the strap.
Yeah, so you'd walk along with the cell phone sticking out the front.
Yeah.
This one strap. I had one of those.
Massive humiliation.
It was cool.
You know,
it did work on some woman because it would split the buzzy.
It did, didn't it? It used to split the buzzy.
Yeah, it used to split right between the buzzy.
Yeah, it did used to split the buzzy.
Which was good.
Yeah. What about the bum bag or fanny pack worn by first-time baby boom travellers?
Yeah, that is a humiliator.
Normally done with a three-quarter pant and an Essex travelling sandal. but yeah, but just put things in your pocket, for God's sake. And also the idea that with traveller's checks in it, 9 times out of 10. You don't need traveller's checks anymore.
And as if a punishing baby boomer is going to be able to protect anything they've got, even if it's a fanny pack up the front.
Yeah.
And also, it's all just going to fall out. It's too weird. And it also says, rob me, I'm clearly a tourist.
Well, yeah, because the other thing is you get pickpockets, particularly in Europe.
Yeah.
You get pickpockets, but also you get people that can they can whip up a fanny pack in no time at all and take everything that they know that you've got important things in your fanny pack.
Yeah,
that's why you're carrying it.
Plus, there's cultural differences between where the fanny is. In England, of course, the fanny is up front.
Mm-hmm.
In the States, the fanny is out back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's freaking confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about the special pre-bought environment-saving supermarket carry bags?
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah,
when someone turns up with their own bags?
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
I mean, sure, good on you, but slightly humiliating.
Yeah. What about the cream army surplus backpack? Generally with the names of metal bands written on in black vivid,
yep.
Like Metallica, AC/DC. I used to see a lot of that. And
a lot of Marilyn Manson.
A lot of Marilyn Manson, often worn with a Trek or a Nomad. You know, that's when those backpacks did their best work.
Well, I feel like they weren't cream. I feel they were slightly off khaki.
It's kind of like a khaki beige sort of cream
sort of baby.
Colour.
Yeah. What about the number three bag sitting under the bed?
Yeah, that's obviously kind of unhygienic, but I mean, sometimes you've got no bin to put it in, so what are you going to do? How long was it under the bed for?
Until someone found it much later.
Is this a situation that occurred with you?
No, I'm just saying that it could have occurred.
Okay.
What about, I find something this very humiliating, I've seen it a lot, the matching expensive luggage on a domestic flight on either an ATR 72 or a Bombardier Q300.
Oh, yes.
You know, when someone turns up with a bunch of matching Prada luggage.
Yeah, and you're travelling from Auckland to Napier.
Yeah, and you've got two bags that are matching, and then you've got a carry bag that you wheel in that's matching.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can get away with that on an international flight. Potentially you could, but you definitely can't take that kind of luggage on an ATR 72 or a Bombardier Q300.
Matt Heath and Jeremy Wells, the Hauraki Breakfast.
Matt, last night I was watching Seven Sharp and I saw this.
We love that you're in all black, but that's not the only reason you're on this show. Tell us about this backyard segment you're going to be doing.
Yeah, Kiwis love their backyard, you know. So what I thought I'd do is over the next few months, get out and about, visit some prominent Kiwis, New Zealanders, and see what their backyards are like.
Love it. So who have you signed up so far? Who have you roped in?
Well, I'm trying to twist your arm still, Tony, so...
You don't want to see my backyard.
One of the things on the list. Actually, what would be even better is if I could get through Mike's security and come and have a glass of wine on his deck. I reckon that'd be pretty impressive.
Can I just say that having been to his house, you won't get offered a glass of wine, and he definitely doesn't even know about his backyard. He's never even swum in his pool before.
Former All Black and Crusaders halfback Andy Ellis joins us on the line now. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Morning, boys. Yeah, very well, thank you.
Have you just got back from Japan, have you?
Got back a couple of weeks ago, yes. So just settling into New Zealand summer, which has been rather nice.
And now you're going to muck into people's backyards.
Yeah, got about four months off in between Japanese seasons. So, thought I'd get around and see what sort of backyards we've got in this country.
Sounds like a bit of a euphemism, but you're actually talking strictly about people's backyards.
Yeah, literally. I'm talking about swimming on people's decks and checking out their veggie gardens. And
again, that sounds like another euphemism there, Andy. Especially getting into Tony Street's backyard, checking out her vegetable garden. You've got to be very, very careful what you say.
Yeah, it depends how dirty your mind is.
Well, that's true. That's totally true. Hey, we were just talking about Ben from Accounts, and I see Ben Smith, he signed up for the All Blacks again until 2020. And Matt was suggesting that because he and Matt then put his hand towards his palm towards his face and sort of made like a washing motion on his face, which he then indicated that actually had to do with the fact that he was white, that people underestimated him and went to smash him, and then turned out that he was actually quite fast and he would slip around tackles. Matt's suggesting that because of his whiteness, he gets around, he breaks tackles because of his whiteness. What do you reckon about that theory?
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. Yeah, Bender, he's one of those kind of sort of slippery, bony kind of guys, if that makes sense. You know, you think you got him covered and he's gone on you. And there's not a lot of white guys like that, so I suppose
you describe the truth to that. Ben from Accounts has Pacific Island flair, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, nice.
Well, I don't know. As well, people kind of go high, and I reckon they spot a white guy and they're like, here's a little white guy, we'll smash him, we'll go high. And then next thing you know, he's ducked under it.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. A guy like that, like he's quick off the mark. Again, not a trait that a lot of us white boys have got. But, you know, he goes good.
Hey, Andy Ellis, you're going to be backyard reporter for Seven Sharp. I'm just wondering, what happens if you come across some body buried in the back of someone's house? Of course, there's been a lot of bodies buried in backyards over the course of history. What's the procedure if you find a dead body in someone's backyard decomposing in their compost heap or something like that? Do you immediately stop filming? Do you go to the police? Do you turn a blind eye? What do you do?
Well, I hope someone doesn't invite me to come and look at their backyard and there's a decomposing body in there. That would be a worry to start with, because I suspect they'll probably be the next on the list.
Yeah, and also it's a massive own goal if you've just killed someone to invite a camera crew around in a famous All Black round
to
your house. You know, it's going to bring a lot of tension into done.
Make a hell of a story.
Well, exactly. Sometimes in modern times with infill housing, You might be in one person's backyard. You might just smell, you think, that's an unusual smell. It smells like a decomposing body. And it might just be over the next person's backyard, or it might be over the fence from another person. I mean, you don't know.
Mate, you don't know. Yeah, I mean, I haven't smelt a decomposing body, so I don't know.
What I'm trying to say is you need to lock down a process. You need to lock down a process as to what you're going to do if you do come across a decomposing body in someone's backyard. I think the first thing you should do is alert the authorities.
Okay, that's good. Thanks for that. That's a good tip.
Then continue filming. making sure that you get your segment.
Well, Seven Sharp is part entertainment, part news, isn't it? So it's the perfect place to find a decomposing body, if you know what I'm saying.
I see exactly what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy Ellis, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Good luck with your new role as Seven Sharp backyard reporter.
Thanks, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be good fun. It's a great show, so, yeah, should be good fun.
Great New Zealander.
Good New Zealander. Great New Zealander. Slippery. Bit like Ben from Accounts.
What do you mean?
What are you
doing your hand in front of your face for?
He's white.
This is the middle of the Matt and Jerry podcast, which
means... It's not the middle.
Well, close enough to the middle.
Yeah, but it's not the actual middle.
Okay. You are a certain ways through the Matt and Jerry podcast. There's still some great stuff to come, so listen to the end. And
the rest of it's not very good either.
Okay. All right.
So waste of time, this little bit here.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll just shut up then, shall I? Jesus Christ.
It's the Fact Factor.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's 7:32 on the Matt and Jerry Show. Time for the Fact Factor. In light of the All Blacks being bugged by allegedly one of their own employees, I want a bug facts, please, from you, Matt, this morning, and nothing too sexy, if you can avoid it.
All right, okay.
Kids are in the car.
Still the draconian clampdown on sexy facts continues.
That's right.
All right, I'll keep them clean.
What's your first bug fact?
In 1945, the Young Pioneers, the Soviet-Russian equivalent of Boy Scouts, presented the U.S. ambassador with a wooden seal of the U.S. to hang in his home as a gesture of friendship. 7 years later, it was found to be a bug listening device, and they'd been listening to him ever since.
What a fact! That has the Fact Factor.
Genius, come in with the Scouts.
Yeah.
That's clever thinking.
And just sat up on his in his office.
Yeah, that's very, very smart.
Sat there.
You'd never get away with that anymore, would you?
No.
You wouldn't get away with that if you tried to bug Steve Chu's office, sent something in, although...
I bet you would.
Yeah.
Well, bug the Bledisloe Cup.
Well, I think you could bug...
If Australia ever gets the Bledisloe Cup back, they should bug it.
Yeah, well, you could bug Steve Chu's breast implants that he's about to get this year. That would be quite interesting, wouldn't it? Chuck a bug in the breast implant and you could hear everything Steve Chu did. You could also probably hear the inner workings of Steve Chu's body, which is probably not what you want to hear. But that's going to be great when he gets those fake breasts. It's really going to do great thing for women in sport. Anyway, great start for you, Matt. One from one. What's your second bug fact?
Electrical bug zappers often spray a mist of insect parts 7 feet from the zapper when zapping a bug.
Fact, you Heath. That's fact.
I told you nothing sexy.
What? That's not sexy, is it?
Spreading insect parts. For a lot of people, they find that very sexy, spreading insect parts.
Over 7 feet?
Yeah, spreading it.
From a bug zapper.
Well, you're talking about spreading and insect parts. And I think there's a lot of people out there that would find that particularly sexy.
I'm invoking my right to a lifeline. 0800 Hobonaki. One caller decides if that fact was good or bad.
Yeah, Jerry, I think that's a bad call on your behalf.
Let's go to Jordan from Hamilton. Morning, Jordan. That was sexy, hey, wasn't it?
I didn't think that was very sexy at all, to be honest. I mean, who wants to be sprayed with dead bug parts? I don't care how much spreading's going on.
Well, there's some people find that particularly sexy because
there were very few people
spreading her bug parts.
Well, okay,
I think it's a very small minority.
Well, in this room we've got me.
Yep.
We've got Jordan from Hamilton. Well, mm-hmm. He's not in this room; he's in Hamilton. And we've got race relations conciliator Chris Goodwin.
Yeah.
And Jerry, you're the only one that finds getting spread in insect parts sexy.
Well, it's not. I don't find this getting spread in insect parts, getting sprayed by insect parts sexy. I'm just saying, some people would find spreading insect parts, and then that they'd think, you know, you spread them and then you, you know, get in there.
No, but that's nothing to do with the fact. That's all come from your mind.
That's sexy.
No, look, well, that's a turnaround on the fact. Thank you, Jordan from Hamilton.
No worries.
What a fact. That has the fact factor.
How good was Seddon Park in Hamilton on Sunday?
What's that got to do with spreading insect parts?
Oh, Jordan.
Oh, he's from Hamilton.
He's from Hamilton.
Oh, I thought you were trying to say that there was a whole lot of spreading insect parts there.
It's about 150 degrees there.
So hot. That was amazing. All right, what's your third and final bug fact?
The voice of Bugs Bunny, Mel Blanc, fell into a coma after a car accident and would only respond to people who addressed him as one of his many cartoon characters, and did so in character. The first thing he said after 3 weeks in a coma was, "What's up, Doc?" to a doctor who said, "How you doing, Bugs Bunny?"
Fact you, Heath. That's fact.
That's a cartoon fact. That's not a bug fact. You're trying to get that by saying it's Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
I know what you're trying to do there.
But hang on, I've already won the fact factor because I got the first one and then I went to the phones on the second one.
Oh, damn.
So I've got
the agenda.
Later, All Blacks listening charges. Soon, male contraception. But now a man makes up Sylvia Park change room sex.
A Helen Sines customer claimed on Facebook he overheard sex noises from a change room before discovering number threes all over his clothes that he'd tried on. Julian Rivers Smith said after seeing the couple leave, he went to pick up the clothes he'd tried on and realised they were literally buckets of number threes all over them in the walls. Julian Rivers Smith has previously invented a story about kids pooing in a McDonald's playground, which was found to be fake. He said even after notifying a staff member, the couple was still in the store acting like nothing had ever happened and browsing at more clothes to number three on.
What an interesting way for Julian Rivers Smith to try and get famous and get some play. So, first of all, you know, it's not that cool to get number threes all over you. You know what I mean?
No.
It's the kind of thing that you just complain about and keep discreet. But I guess getting any kind of play or any kind of fame feels good to him.
Well, he's got that other story about kids pooing in a McDonald's playground, which got him a bit of play as well, didn't it?
But it doesn't really give him much kudos, you know. Play is one thing, but, you know, you want a bit of admiration with your story as well, don't you?
Well, maybe that's how you think about it, Matt. But that's not how everybody thinks. I don't think everybody takes that next step.
Right.
I think some people just want attention. And then after they get the attention, they then go, oh.
Well, he must have really enjoyed the attention of the McDonald's poo playground.
Mm.
And because then when he was found out to be making it up, that didn't make as big a news as the initial splash.
Yep.
And so he's made up the second literal splash in Hallenstein's,
mm-hmm.
which has got him a big thing again. So he must have loved that buzz.
I've always found those people quite interesting because with a story like that, you think, wow, I mean, you know, you had this one bizarre thing that happened to you once in your life, but oh, look, a couple of years later, another bizarre thing happens to
you. Yeah, so what's next for this guy?
Exactly. The reality of life is there's just not that many bizarre things that happen to you.
Especially not excretal ones with no evidence.
And why also are they always in a place? Are they always at a McDonald's or they're always located at a shop or a...
If I was Hallensteins, I'd be reasonably angry at Julian Rivers Smith because Hallensteins don't want people thinking that there's number threes everywhere.
No.
Do you? Because, I mean, when I buy a new pair of pants, I don't want anyone else's number threes in them.
No, exactly. But also the idea of just getting in on number threes and then just browsing through the store afterwards and all over the clothes, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, there was too much number threes in his story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hope he's enjoying this little bit of fame he gets right now. I hope it feels good, Julian Rivers Smith. Hey, but it does bring to question what you should and shouldn't do in a changing room. So next, I'd love to get a caller on the line on 0800 Hodaki to put them through the what you should and shouldn't do in a changing room test.
The Hodaki Breakfast with Matt Heath and Jeremy Wells.
In light of a man making up false claims, a couple in Hallenstein's Sylvia Park, number three to all over the change room, we've got a what you should and shouldn't do in a changing room test, Matt.
That's right. We're going to put a couple of listeners through this to see exactly and test really what we shouldn't do and maybe work out a set of rules around this. Good morning, Sven, 33 from Devonport. How are you this morning?
Hey, bloody good.
Good. You try on a lot of clothes, Sven?
Oh, I try on the odd piece, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good. All right, we've also got Calvin, 31, from Sonnynook here. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Pretty good.
Oh, good. Okay. It's a very simple quiz, Sven and Calvin. I'll read out a scenario, and you say whether you should or shouldn't do this, okay? And Sven is going to go first, and at the end we'll tally the scores, and the winner will receive a Matt and Jerry pillowcase set, the much coveted.
And a Kane Stu the Ship Williamson hat as well, the captain's hat.
And a captain's hat. That's a great thing. And, of course, the Ask Against the Grass grab bag is up as well, which is the Pixies tickets and the David Bowie vinyl, but that you have to press your ass against the glass to get that. That's not related to this.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get some tense music going. In a change room, Sven, should you hiff all the clothes that don't fit you on the floor and leave them for someone else to pick up?
Absolutely.
Calvin?
Yeah, but not just the change room floor that you're in, the one next to it as well.
It's both correct.
Okay. One for Sven, one for Calvin.
Yep, that's even so far. Question two.
Go down.
In a change room, should you take heaps of clothes and scrunch them up on the floor, then curl up and go to sleep on the floor and refuse to get out?
Sven from Devonport?
Yes, absolutely.
And Calvin from Sonnynook?
Not on the floor, up on the seats, and they can't see who's in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to accept both answers to that.
Okay.
That's two all. Jeez, you guys know your stuff. Okay, question three. In a change room, should you try on jeans whilst wearing zero nicks?
Sven?
Yeah. Yeah, give it a go, and then you get a better feel for them.
Mm-hmm. Calvin?
Yes and no. I mean, pretty much any other pant but the jeans because of the whole zipper fly thing with your downstairs. Yeah. I mean, track pants are really acceptable, but jeans, I've not had much luck with this, so I'm
just going.
Well answered, Calvin.
That goes to Calvin for the logic.
Calvin's three, Sven two.
Okay, the pressure's really on Sven now as we come into four. I've lost Sven.
He was so angry that he hung up on us.
Did he?
About that last...
That last call.
He wasn't happy with that last decision.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is looking good for Calvin. Sven's back.
You're back, Sven.
Bloody North Shore.
Sven's coming off from Devonport.
Classic North Shore manoeuvre. Okay, it's 2-3 to Calvin at the moment.
Okay, Sven, should you put all the clothes you are trying on under your street clothes and walk out without paying?
As long as you take that little tag off, yeah. Yep.
Calvin.
You're right.
Calvin?
It's only a crime if you get caught, right?
Okay, that's got both one correct. Yeah. You absolutely should.
4-3 so far to Calvin.
All right, it's getting to the business end of this competition. Should you smoke a J in a Hallensteins changing room?
Sven.
Ooh. You need a plastic bottle to blow the smoke into.
Good thinking.
All right, interesting, Sven. Calvin?
I'm going to go with the hash cookies on this one, just a little bit more discreet, but, yeah.
So,
same sort of deal.
You're not worried there, Calvin, that you're going to go in there, you're going to have the hash cookies in the changing room and then they're going to come on really fast and then you're not going to be able to stand up and get out and you'll be stuck in there for up to 2 days?
Well, there's a good chance I'll be sleeping on the seat, so that'll be fine.
Okay, cool. All right, that's correct for both of them on that one.
Okay, so it's now 5-4.
Okay, Sven, should you get on the glass Barbie in a Hallensteins changing room?
Yeah, it's got no smell, so yeah, definitely.
Okay, Sven would get on the glass Barbie, Calvin?
Only if they've got their own light bulb. Just if it doesn't have a light bulb, then you shouldn't be getting on it. You know, like don't take your own glass barbecue; just take theirs.
No, I'm not sure about that, Calvin, actually. I think Sven's evened it up.
Yeah, that's evened up, actually.
Fair call.
5 each. Yeah, I mean, you've got to take your own glass Barbie in that situation. If you're taking out the light bulb, you're going to attract attention.
So it comes down to this final question. Whilst in a Hallensteins in Sylvia Park, the site of a made-up story about number threes everywhere, Sven, should you invite a bunch of friends in for a normal saucy barbecue?
Yeah, have a sword fight too.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
Sven, Calvin.
Yeah, we'll come down to Calvin here.
No, I have to disagree on this. I mean, the sword fight's fine, but yeah, the sausage barbecue's not so good.
Calvin, you win it.
That's right, you don't want to invite people in for a saucy barbecue. Glass barbecue, absolutely 100% fine. Saucy barbecue, not good, because you'll set off the alarms and cause a ruckus.
Yeah, plus you've got a wheel in the barbecue, and you've got a bunch of mates standing around in a tiny little cubicle trying on clothes.
Hopeless.
It's impractical.
I don't know what Sven was thinking there. Congratulations, Calvin. You've taken away the amazing Matt and Jerry pillowcases and the Kane Steady the Ship Williamson captain's hat. Thanks to Mammoth.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
So that's it. That's the end of the podcast. And is your life any different? Probably not.
I reckon it would be. I'd call that a life changer.
I wouldn't.
That was a life changer.
I'd say that was a life sucker and a massive waste of time.
Well, you can have your life suck so much that it changes it. You know what I'm saying?